Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City, NPR News Talk 90.7, putting Delmarva first. It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
For years, there have been discussions about revitalizing the downtown area of Salisbury, from opening and closing the main drag to improving the streetscape to tax breaks. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. But now there is a plan to sell off three of the city-owned parking lots that dominate parts of the downtown area. This idea is being pushed by Mayor Jim Ireton, who joins us this morning in the studio. And welcome to the station.
Thanks, Don. It's great to be able to talk again about downtown revitalization and how we're at a point now where we're going to get it done and stop talking about it.
Well, as a matter of fact, and that's why I've got you in here. Because, well, one of the new thing, at least for me, after having watched this thing for about 10 years, the idea of selling off the parking lots. Outline for me what the idea is behind selling those off and what kind of vision is there for those parking lots?
Right. The parking lots have got to go. Waterfront property parking lots are just a thing of the past. They were designed in the 50s and 60s as places that was the thing to do at the time in public works. It's not the thing to do now. Right now, you're supposed to have mixed-use developments on these areas that are waterfront, getting people over to parking garages, getting them parking in a centralized location. It is necessary for Salisbury to take the next step in its revitalization of its downtown and to do this, because we have proven now that we can support restaurants. We have proven we can support Third Fridays, a Latino festival, the Salisbury Festival, a New Year's Eve festival. The only thing left to do, Don, is heads and beds. And none of my plan for this, for the downtown area, is new. It is about getting those lots and getting people living on those lots. That's what's important.
So what are we going to describe, first of all, where those lots are in relationship to what most people consider downtown, and then what do you envision to be in there?
Well, parking lot number 10, of course, is up at the crossroads where 50 and 13 cross one another, across from the Royal Farm store on Route 50. Parking lot number 1, of course, is in between the library and the First Shore Federal Building, and then parking lot 11 is behind the library. So those are the three that we're most interested in somebody doing something with. Again, what needs to go there? A mixed-use development that has people living and businesses working and people coming to the downtown right there. Top couple floors have to be apartments and condos. The bottom floors have to be commercial shops, those sorts of things, and hopefully some public space thrown in there for the public to use, park, green space, things of that nature. What I believe we're already revitalizing. When you take a look at the number of businesses that are now open, the number of restaurants that are now open, you take a look at some of the dead wood that's falling away. Yes, some people have left, and it's because their business model doesn't work in 2014. So they've got to go. And then you take a look at our parking garage across the street from parking lot number 1 and how it's only basically at most a third filled. And you say, those people who are parking in parking lot number 1 can come over and park in the parking garage. We can save some of the parking lot on the outer edges of some of these. So again, we're not talking about doing revitalization. I can sort of hear that in your voice. I've been talking about this for 10 years. Well, we're doing it now, and it's time for us to get this job done. The only thing left, after proving we can do all those other events and all those other businesses, whether they be the Feldman's revitalization, whether they be the Ethan Allen Building revitalization, the Firehouse revitalization, whether it be the 5th anniversary of Third Friday, all those things are wonderful. The only thing left for the boom The only thing left that will really transform our downtown is if we have more people living there. So the goals are simple. Let me give you those. The goals are to increase the residential population by 750. They are to increase our commercial space downtown by 100,000 square feet. They are to have 300 more people working downtown over the next several years. All of those, we have to get rid of 25% of our impervious surface. We're going to ask our residents to pay a stormwater utility fee. We got to get rid of the largest stormwater runoff places. And two of those three parking lots, one is on the biggest cross on the Delmarva Peninsula, where Route 13 crosses Route 50, somewhere between 65,000 and 85,000 car trips a day from those two roads, and the other two are waterfront property.
What kind of businesses do you envision going into?
Well,
there
are businesses
area
that will support the people who are living upstairs. You put 750 more people living downtown, they're going to need a place to get more pizza. They're going to need a place to get more coffee. They're going to support the businesses that are already there. These are 750 people and their relatives and their guests and the people come in and their parents who come to visit that will be potential customers for Market Street, Roadie Joe's, Cellar Door, Mojo's, Sushi Kanpai, all of those things. So, you know, let's talk brass tacks. What we're dealing with right now is, oh my God, they're going to change something. It's time to get over that. It's time to get over that. We're going to do our best to make sure people have safe places to park, affordable places to park, and places to park within one or two blocks of where they're going. Other than that, I can't help you. I mean, let's just, if we really want to do this interview and talk about what's going to happen, you're going to go find, you or somebody from your station and some other media station's going to go find somebody in parking lot number one who's going to raise a ruckus because they're not going to have the closest parking spot to the front door of the library. And if that's where this discussion goes, then we will have failed with a large vision of the change for Salisbury. I believe we can't afford to fail this time. We have come so far. We have had elections. People have made decisions. It's time to start acting like a city, not a small town stuck in a big city trying to figure out how to rearrange our lives to walk one block.
Let me ask you this, sort of historical, sort of reaching back, and you're a long-time Salisbury resident. How did it come about that we have these parking lots in the first place? I mean, my understanding is there were actual businesses in these parking lots at one time.
The great part about parking lot number one is that it was automobiles. They sold automobiles there because, remember, Camden Street's going to come down that street, you know, 100 years ago, go across a little bridge and then up Camden Avenue. I mean, it was the way south out of town. You know, there's the great part about parking lot number one and 11 is that there was never anything really on top of it that could cause problems underneath of it today. So When the 70s came and we were gonna redevelop a little bit and people wanted a place to park, we put them on these large spaces because people wanted, that was the automobile was the most important thing. What you're finding with sustainable communities and what the state wants and what the state will help us with, it's walkable. It's got green space. It is not concrete parking lots. So that's what the state is willing to help us with, for the health of our residents, for green space and places for children to play and outdoors. You know, we convert these because we have the spaces for these people to park in already.
How does this contrast to, say, for instance, envisioning something like downtown being sort of a tourist attraction as opposed to what you just seem to be describing, at least for these parking lots, as being something that is sort of an economic environment all of in itself. It's an ecosystem, an economic ecosystem, that part of what you're looking at. Because you're saying, well, we need the shops because somebody's going to be living there, or that we need the stores. How does that fit into the idea that perhaps downtown should be a destination, an entertainment destination, for example? Or does
it? Well, that's exactly, and that's why you talk about what we did, what the city council president and I were able to do with the firehouse. You know, everybody's raising their arms. They've given it away. They've not given it away. We sold that building for what someone would give it. It's not the accessible amount that's important. It's about how much you can get for that building when you go to sell it. So it's the same thing with the parking lots. If there is a venue, which we believe now that the firehouse will become an entertainment venue, then that's going to be someplace that people have a destination for. I think that places like Berlin, and congratulations to them on the coolest small town in America, you know, they have that identity. whether it's antiques or brew pubs or stormwater utility before ours, whatever it is for them, they have it. But when you are 7 miles from a place that has 400,000 people in it for 4 months a year, I guess you can get that. Salisbury's identity downtown is going to be a place where people shop, where people eat, and where people go to see art or performances. That's what we are. We're not, I believe the mistake that we make is that we want to treat Salisbury like it's got 3,000 people like Berlin, and it doesn't. It's got 33,000 people, and it needs to act like a larger city. So a performing arts venue, a place where SWAC and the arts community and AIG and the people over at Chesapeake East can bring those things together like they do at the Salisbury Festival. You have arts on the plaza. That needs to be a permanent situation where people can always come see those things. You take a look at the All First building, now going to be a ballet emporium, you know, a place where you can, you practice, you learn, you perform, and people are coming there all the time. You look at, you take a look at the city center now, almost 100% filled. You're saying make it a destination. I say people are already coming, and now I want more people to come.
So who are the kinds of people who are making bids on these kinds of properties who have this kind of vision?
Well, we can't.
I know you can't identify individuals.
Let me switch that question a bit. Sure. Let me tell you, who are the type of people who are going to take people up on building this? I think the university with its presence downtown for the first time, that's going to be huge. I think the hospital with the partnership with UMES, the University of Maryland at Baltimore, Salisbury University, when we talk about that medical school across the street in the Daily Times building over the next couple years, those are the type of people we want there. We want people who have determined that they want urban living. I cannot give people a parking space 3 feet from their booth in a restaurant like we can do out up at the North End. But I don't think the North End people are the type we're trying to get downtown. I think we're talking about young people, educated people, health conscious people, bike riding people, kayak riding people, young people that are associated with the arts and the university. That's who I think we're going. And I think that there's also, to be honest with you, a market out there for older people, for senior citizens who do not want upkeep on their yard, who do not want to pay a huge homeowners association fees to make sure that the common area is done. I think there's a possibility for some of that downtown as well, who want to be close to the library, who want to be close to AIG, you know, who want to be close to the art galleries that the university has opened downtown. So I think the argument has been, should we be trying to get the people who are eating at Olive Garden? No, we should not. We should be marketing ourselves to people who are looking to downsize the amount of space they want to live in, who want a walkable place to get to a restaurant, a bar, a store, an art gallery, someplace where they can volunteer, and a place to get coffee. All of those things can be there.
Well, one of the things, because we were actually joking about it before we went on the air, which is there's this contrast between the mall up in the North End, the center at Salisbury, and downtown. And one of the things, as a matter of fact, somebody had shown me was a map. And if you overlay the center,
take
the
parking
mall,
lot number one.
That's right.
Put it on the mall. The mall still dwarfs
that space.
I have family members who walk the mall all the time. And I say to them, you could just come down and walk around parking lot number one, and they'll say, but it's a smaller space. So I think that it's clear that these places, the middle of that plaza, from mm-hmm. all the other places around it that are destinations, are actually closer than the mall. But I don't want to discount the mall, and the North End is what it is. We gave the incentives, you know, 15 years ago to get the big box companies to come, and guess what? People came, and they're still coming right now as we do this interview. Those places are packed. Because people want those things. We now believe what people are looking for is a more urban area where they do not have to drive as much, where they can get good service in eclectic boutique style type places at an affordable price. What our job is at this point with whoever decides to develop, whoever gives us this plan for the development of those parking lots, what we've got to figure out how to do is make sure that we are offering a fair amount of incentives the way we did up at the North End, because that was successful. That was money well spent up at the North End. Now, what will the opponents call it? What word will it be? Come on now. subsidies. That's what we're going to hear from the naysayers. So I'll just put that out there right now so that when you hear it, when you interview the naysayers, they'll go, ah, your listeners will go, Jim said that's the word that they would use. It's a subsidy. There's so much going on right now that I don't believe we can afford not to strike while the iron is hot. We're going to do the Main Street Master Plan second phase from Division Street down to Route 13. All of that will be redone. It'll be made narrow. It'll better walking, slower traffic, time period to look like the plaza with the brick. We've made, I believe, myself and the city council majority have made the investments and the decisions that signal to the people who will build downtown that we are serious. The EDU free zone, a huge incentive for you to come back downtown. The square footage downtown is less than anywhere else on our footprint. Basically, we believe that the state will help us because this is in the sustainable communities designation. It is in the enterprise zone designation for job creation credits and tax deferments. It is in the arts and entertainment district. It is in all of its infill construction. It's on water and sewer. It's not sprawl. I believe that when we go to the state with a plan that they'll jump to help us out because this is exactly what you want. All I know is this, Don, is we've had two elections. People have spoken. We've had a council election. People have spoken. And it's time to start doing this.
Let me just follow up on something you just talked about in relationship to the mall to the north. That is, the sense I get is, one is that you're not envisioning downtown to become any kind of competitor in the sense that the northern part, the mall does its thing with its particular patrons, mm-hmm. and downtown does its thing with its own patrons.
I think you're doing the traditional media divide and conquer. I don't think it's a division. I think it depends on what you want and when you want.
Right. I mean,
if I want carpet or paint, maybe I do go up to the Lowe's or the Home Depot. Maybe I do decide to go to the South End to Ace. It all depends on what you want and when you want it. If I want Pizza City that we're going to get when we go back to the office today, I do that. If I want a gourmet pizza or I want sushi, I'm going to go. If you want the Chinese buffet, you're going to go one place. If you want, eclectic sushi type things, you're going to go downtown. We have to stop thinking of narrowing people into these little pegs. And I don't want to do that because I think a destination, whether it be a commercial one, a residential one, an industrial one, is if that's what people want and you build what people want, they're going to come and they're going to park wherever they can to get it from you. So I think we've seen, because we've talked about in previous interviews, some businesses that did not work in downtown. We talked about the restaurant that came in before Roady Joe's. And you start the interview, the other media outlets start the interview with another business gone from downtown. You don't go and you don't say to that business owner, did you have enough capital? Did you do enough advertising? Did you do enough coupons? Roady Joe's is doing exactly what it should be doing in downtown. Just had its 1-year anniversary because it has the capital to get the things on the radio and the coupons in the newspaper, all of those things to the customers it needs to get there. And it's brought a whole new generation of young people to downtown. And you know what? They don't mind parking in a parking lot that's right across the street.
Let me ask you, the other contrast, the publicity, that's the word I was looking for.
The money to sustain a business in downtown. These people have it. I believe that the people who are going to do the bridal shop in the Ethan Allen building are going to have that kind of capital to do it. Obviously, Mr. Gillis has that kind of capital. Obviously, his son has that kind of capital over in the firehouse. The people who own Sushi Kanpai have that capital. Mojo's has that capital.
Now, the other contrast that I've always seen, particularly with the mall, when I became aware, I always ask myself, well, gee, why is it that you would wander around in a mall that's probably just as large, just inside, it's just as large as, say, downtown? And the echo that I get back is, for myself, is it's the environment. They design malls so that you can walk around and you want to stay forever. If I'm walking around downtown, as it is right now, mm-hmm. I don't get that sense that I want to like stay there or wander around. I may say, for instance, go to Easton and then the whole down sort of area would have the shops. Yeah, well, maybe that's something. I mean, I was just a couple of weeks ago, I was up in Hoboken of all places, and I was walking down the street and it was like, yeah, this is a street I might want to like spend some time with. I don't get that sense about downtown as it currently is configured. Mm-hmm. How do you address that attractiveness, that I want to stay down here. I'm not just going, say, from one chunk sort of a building to another. I mean, how do you create that cohesiveness?
Well, I think, to be honest with you, is that you have to decide what it is that you want. What was it in Hoboken that made you walk? I mean, I don't know.
Right.
You know, I would say that We're not an antiques capital. We've got Season's Best down at the bottom, does a very brisk business that's, you know, always open, you know, always participating in Third Friday. That's great. Yeah, there's some spaces between, say, Division Street and Baptist Street where it does sort of become a lawyer mall.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Up, yeah.
But, you know, but those are important people. Those workers and those people and those businesses are very important to the restaurants during the day. What I think is the transformation, because what I get the impression from your question and what we've talked about before is this, is that somehow you want it to go from the way it is right now to all of a sudden everybody is walking everywhere. There's everything that you need. And that is not the way this happens. The way this happens is over the past 5 years, Third Friday happening, getting people down there. The way this happens is the city council passing the EDU free zones, us hiring a business development consultant so that we can say to the property owners down there, what can we do to transform this into something that we want? We have brought so many people down there. The people who are opening up that ballet company, are Third Friday people. And they look down there and they go, what a beautiful spot to do this in. Parents and kids can park right behind it. This has to be an evolving thing. You're not going to wake up one day, Don, and go, wow, this has everything I wanted in Hoboken, because that is simplifying the solution. So what I have tried to do, and it is not always easy, is, you know, you have people call and they say, you need a Watson Smokehouse downtown, like it was when we were little. Well, Watson Smokehouse is now where my niece lives and it's apartments. So it's not going to be the same. So the question is, what do you do in the interim while you are making this change, while people are clamoring, it's not there yet? Well, let's be clear, the difference in the demographic between here and Frederick. Let's be clear about the demographic between here and Berlin. Let's be clear about the differences in historical perspective of here as in anywhere else. It is going to be different from anywhere else, and its identity will come out of what we allow, not allow to flourish, but what we are there hand in hand helping to flourish. Maybe it's bands. Maybe it's performance. You know, and it starts with the firehouse and about 110 seats. And it becomes a place where you have recording acts come. We have the expertise to get that job done. Not my expertise. I believe the expertise is out there with the people who own the building to do it. Maybe it ends up being something along the waterfront. Maybe we entice something like Survival Products to come down and use the floating dock and the river as the draw to sell those, you know, the kayaks and things that they do sell to customers, and you can actually test drive it right there on the water. Maybe it is a combination of the expertise that will come with the medical school that the universities are talking about and that the Peninsula Regional is talking about. I believe right now that both Dr. Bell, Dr. Eschbach, and Dr. Nalepa are so completely on board with making sure that what they create there to help us in the community. Maybe it's medical related. When we take a look at the Lower Eastern Shore and its high rates of cancer, heart disease, its lack of skin doctors, OBGYNs, primary care physicians, maybe we build something out off of that. What is Councilwoman Mitchell, the multipliers? What comes out of the things that work? I think sometimes on these interviews, you want me to come down here and say, there'll be a pizza shop, there'll be a hair salon, there'll be a place has to take care of itself. The government can't get in the business of saying this is what you will build there. Our government, this government, Mr. Day's government, my government, is trying to set ourselves at the table with the private sector and say, what do you need to come down here? Because we are willing to help in any way possible that we can. We're making the investments especially along Main Street, that show that we are serious about changing the way this place looks. But I can't say to you, Don, you're going to walk down the street and you'll be able to find a size 36, 34 pants at this price point. I don't know what it turns into, but I don't think the government should be saying what it should turn into. I think we should be creating a business environment that allows people to flourish. I'm sorry to sound like my good Republican friends. You know what I mean? This let's get out of the way, do what we can to help, and allow private enterprise to take its path.
Well, I mean, you're not facing really problems that most other cities face as well. As city leaders, it's not like you can put a store here and there, because you have to obviously attract businesses. Which brings us to the issue you're talking about, subsidies and so on. I know over the past, I've looked at development of downtowns. And we had, in fact, at one point there were tax abatement programs. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting about the tax abatement programs in a number of cities is those cities that offered them, ultimately, their downtowns did not particularly grow well. Other cities which didn't did grow well. And the big difference in those studies was that the cities who flourished wasn't really about the tax breaks. It was about the infrastructure. It was about the labor force.
The
it was about
of
all
life,
those things.
All of those things.
Right.
That's right.
So now I know that you got, for instance, the equivalent dwelling units, mm-hmm. right, that you want to forego. There's the enterprise zone, some tax breaks. How do you balance between, on the one hand, providing such incentives, but on the other hand, recognizing that the only real reason somebody's going to be coming downtown is because of that infrastructure, and they think that they're going to be able to either sell something or make a business down there? I mean, most businesses, they're locating, they're not really looking, I mean, they'll tell you they're looking for tax breaks, but really what they've already lined up, you know, they've got an idea about what they want.
No, I would disagree with you. I would disagree with you. I would say that I think that's exactly what business owners are looking for, and that's been my mm-hmm. explanation, my experience, sorry, sure. that when we talk to the Chamber of Commerce, they have said that this EDU-free zone mm-hmm. was the single biggest thing the city had done in decades to refocus people into the downtown. We have to offer those incentives, because if you go up north, you know, you have people coming from Delaware, Virginia, all of Maryland, Worcester County, Dorchester County, that is already established itself as the commercial center. What we've got to do is establish the downtown as a cultural, commercial, residential center. So how do we do that? I can't, again, say these are the types of commercial things. All I can say is, you know what? Here are some of the incentives that I can give business to come back down here, build it, and they will come. Councilwoman Mitchell did an incredible job the other day when we had the Envision Salisbury students down from the University of Maryland mm-hmm. School of Architecture through Council President Day. An incredible day. And someone said, well, you shouldn't do anything with any of this until all the buildings are filled. Completely short-sighted. That sense of newness on one of those parking lots will ignite what happens in those older buildings. You know, you've got, I'll give you an example. You've got several old bars from the 1970s sitting on the bottom floors of all of these buildings. You've got Chez Jean Pierre's, you've got, not Little Jimmy's, I can't remember what the other one is, but they're underneath there and you can't do anything with them because the fire codes have changed, okay? And because no one has been in that space, it's not grandfathered into being able to be used. So how do you take a space like that in one of those downtown buildings and say to a business owner, this is a cool space, this is historic, what you can build here, the apartments that you can build here, how are we going to get them to do that instead of just going out along the edge where water and sewer is and say, just build something new? Well, we know that it is cheaper per square footage to do something downtown. Mr. Gillis will tell you that right off the bat. So the city has to come in and say, what are we going to do with this building if none of this works for development right now? And that's where the incentives come in. That's where the EDU incentives come in. That's where, the city's revolving loan fund, again, $2.7 million over the last 30 years given out for people to redo things. You can take a look at the buildings up and down the plaza that have been redone with it. So, you know, I don't necessarily believe that we should give away things, but those EDUs are coming from Linens of the Week that are already in the system, aren't going to be used. That property isn't going to use 300 EDUs from now on. That's creative. That's not a subsidy. That's being creative. We're not coming up with new EDUs for our system. We're just using ones that are already in the system that won't be used at that property. So I think that's incredible. Sustainable communities, enterprise zones, those are state designations that'll give you credits for creating new jobs. I think, you know, the Daily Times is getting ready to do this huge Envision Salisbury thing where they tell us what it is they want us to do instead of we who live here deciding it. But I think the thing that you're going to hear most from people is jobs. And the amount of jobs that a development on any of these parking lots that is going to create through concrete, through building, through surveying, through the next set of contractors down, the multipliers mm-hmm. out, and then who lives there and the money they spend there, and then the businesses that are, you know, on the bottom floor, the commercial part of these developments, if they are built, all the jobs that will go there. I see it as a win-win. We may have to give up a little bit on the front part, but I believe it is the only way that Salisbury's accessible base starts to turn a corner, and we start to say that we're truly going to evolve as a large city. I believe this much. I believe that we can choose to either be Southern or Northern.
And what do you mean by that?
And I mean that there are certain things that I believe, that come from municipalities and places in the South where this sort of poverty is just sort of accepted. I don't want the government involved. I think that the government is evil. I think the government is bad. I think that we have to decide to be progressive. I think we have to decide to be a little bit more Northern here and metropolitan. This city is not going to continue to sprawl out in the middle of nowhere. It's done doing that. Our comprehensive plan says we stopped doing that. So what's left? And if we're not going to go further out, which I don't believe we should, then it is the urban core that we have to take care of. And I don't want us to make the same mistakes that every large city up and down the East Coast in the last 300 years has made with let's spread out, spread out, spread out. We've got to get more. If we get this land over here, then that'll support the revitalization of the core. That's never happened. So let's take care of the core right now. And it will take incentives to do that. And I think we have many on the table that I think a developer is going to be willing to take us up on.
Why do you think it is that downtown has not moved in this direction in the past? I mean, there have been efforts. I mean, I mentioned a few of them with closing off portions and so on. What was there a dynamic there? I mean, there were lots of business folks who sat on the city council and were involved and so on. And
I believe it's this.
What do you think?
Without calling out names.
Yeah.
I think that we have a lot of people who have a lot of agendas downtown. And the people who are going to say no, and I will, that I may call out some names on, those people who are going to say no, off the cuff, no matter what, they're going to focus in on one parking space and what that one parking space is worth instead of looking from 30,000 feet down and saying, if you take a look at redoing this so that there are more people living here, more places to shop, more places with the opportunity to become a destination that you were discussing before, if those people take this, if they are able to lead this discussion, and they will yell and they'll scream, and you'll put your microphone in front of their face because it'll be fun. And you'll never push back on them the way you've pushed back on me today and asked me tough questions. You won't do it. You'll find somebody who wants to make an issue of one parking space on parking lot number one. And if you let them do that, the media lets them do that, and the discussion becomes about that parking lot instead of 750 people living here now, and 300 people working here, and a 100,000 square foot of commercial space, and a 25% drop in our impervious surface. If you let the debate be about that parking lot, then this may not happen. So actually, I say it's up to you.
The reticence or the inability to deal with downtown mm-hmm. doesn't just go back 10 years since I've been here.
Yeah, the 1980s study,
that
and you think, how did they not get it done?
That's right.
How did they not get it done? And I'm not sure because, many of those people I know, many of those people I respect, many of those people, they have different political views than I do, obviously. But I think they've already gone. I think they're gone. I think they've fled. And fine. I mean, honestly, you know, I mean, you take a look at some of the businesses that are down there now, and you take a look at Sushi, you take a look at Roadies, you take a look at Mirabella, the pizza place, you take a look at Main Roots. They want more people. They're not interested in their parking space. They're interested in making money, and theirs is a long term. The difference is this. I'll tell you what the difference is that I believe that all those other plans, people only looked at the short-term gain that they were going to get for their particular interest. I believe that there's a whole new generation downtown that are interested in a long-term, sustainable change for the area. And I, you know, those people I can name, you know, all the those people who own those businesses that I just mentioned. I think that they're in it for the long haul, and I think that they're going to bring some of the old codgers along with them.
Do you see then a renewed sense of energy from the business community for what's happening now, particularly with the idea that some of the parking lots or what's that?
I think that if you take a look at we call him Uncle Ernie because he's such a great guy, Ernie Colburn from the Chamber of Commerce, the way he's working with us to make us better business partners for the business community, what we've done with the EDAT presentation that he did of the county and the city working together with him, I think they are all on board. I think there are a lot of people who are waking up to the possibility downtown, especially business owners, that the building that they own could quite possibly be in 10 years worth a whole hell of a lot more than it's worth right now. I think you're going to see some larger companies begin to move in, and I will definitely send you those press releases when those happen, because I think that, you know, when you take a look at the number of people who are visiting the library each day, if you take a number of people who come into the Art Institute and Gallery over the course of a month, you take a look at what happens to our numbers of people who are eating downtown, coming downtown to socialize, all those numbers are up. And I think it's partly Third Friday. I think it's partly the 3,300 people on the plaza for downtown. We've proven if you build something that people want to come to, I was in the parking garage almost the entire time. Me and D. Kelly in the parking garage downtown almost the entire night of New Year's Eve. And people ride in there, all these people who you know, a fair amount of them had not come to downtown before, but they were like, hey, I don't have to pay $80 a couple to get a half a glass of champagne in 17 minutes to get waited on at the bar. There's going to be a ball drop downtown. They rode into the parking lot. We stopped them. I handed them a Bury sticker for downtown Salisbury, and they were like, you're not going to charge me? I was like, no, it's free. And so many of them were like, well, what would you charge me? I was like, 50 cents an hour, because that's what it is. And they were like, why would you ever complain about this parking garage? I just think that, again, it's a different generation. It's a different set of people who we need to attract. I think we're already doing that. I think you're seeing an amazing amount of people riding bikes downtown, walking dogs downtown. We've got young people talking about playgrounds downtown, changing some of our playgrounds around to be friendlier to younger children. There is a group of pioneers that if I could give some sort of award to that people, you know, would take seriously. You know, when you think about the Ryan Weavers, you think about the Nate Johnsons, you think about the Julia Glanzes that are living, working, investing in downtown. You put them on top of the Jamie Heaters who do Third Fridays and the Brad Gillises and Joey Gilkersons who are in there. You put them on top of some of the lifelong people have been down there. I say go ask Bill Otis what he thinks is going on downtown, because he would be the gauge, because he's seen it be an incredibly busy place to a place where there was nobody there to a place that's coming back. And I think his responses would be that there's been a shot in the arm over the last 5 years. And I think it's because the political leadership has said, this is what we're going to do. And we've had elections and people have decided that we were right.
So when you leave office, whenever that is,
Lord, are we going to talk about that?
What do you envision?
2015, Don. It's still 22 months away. You and WBOC aren't going to get your dream anytime soon.
No, you're much fun. You're a lot more fun than that. What do you see as when you leave office, in terms of what you want for downtown? Mm-hmm. What will downtown look like as compared to what it looked like when you?
Well, I think the tangible, I can touch this, the kinesthetic. Wow, tangible, kinesthetic. Wow, that's a teacher for you right there, isn't it? the hands-on thing is that there needs to be another building. There has to be buildings built down there before I go. I mean, we haven't had a new building since 1981. And I'm pretty sure they were the Dr. Finnegan's buildings on Market Street at the other end of the Market Street parking lot there. So new buildings. The helping the committee do New Year's Eve was absolutely one of the most incredibly satisfying and stressful things I have ever done before in my life. So that getting done. Rhody Joe's opening, cellar door opening, the firehouse getting sold. I think there's already enough for me to I guess one would say, write the biography of my time here. But I'm not done. And I don't think Council President Day is done. And I don't think Shaney Shields is done. I don't think Lauren Mitchell is done. I don't think Tim Spees is done. I don't think they're done. I think that they believe that we can do more and that we have to make these tough decisions and take some of these public hard knocks that are going to come about one parking space sitting at the top of parking lot number one. Because in the end, the naysayers are going to say no no matter what. The naysayers are going to say no if I raise their taxes, no if I lower their taxes. We already know who these people are, and they're going to show up again. The naysayers are going to show up. There's going to be some in the business community who are only thinking about a short-sighted profit that they can make right now instead of a long-term sustainable look. All this is going to be above board. All this is going to be done in the light of day. All of this is going to happen, and it's just going to take votes. The council is going to have to decide to go into a contract with a bidder on one of these parking lots to do this development. I'm going to have to work like a dog at the state level to get us open to sustainable communities funding, Department of DHCD, Housing and Community Development Funds. All of those things. I'm going to have to work with our legislators, both Republican and Democrat, to try and make sure that the state is on board. Because we went and got all these designations, sustainable, enterprise, historic, and I don't know what we've done with them. You know what I mean? We do a really great application, and we get the designation, and everybody's like, rah, you got the designation, and somebody from the state comes, and we cut a ribbon, and something or another happens, and then we don't do anything with it. This is the plan you do something with. This is, when you talk about this infill construction, this is exactly what the state wants us to do already on existing water and sewer that isn't polluting the bay anymore.
We've been speaking with Mayor Jim Ireton, Mayor of Salisbury, and about downtown revitalization.
It's coming.
We'll see it coming.
Oh, it is coming.
Promise me, right?
It'll be you and I will be standing there, Don, and there'll be a crane, and it will be very loud, and all you will hear is me cheering in the background. I probably won't even be able to give you an interview because once the first crane starts, once Feldman's is done and the library is done and Ethan Allen is done, we're not going back. We're not going back to the same old arguments that we have done for the past 30 years. Our citizens have spoken in two elections.
We've been speaking with Mayor Jim Ireton on plans for revitalization of downtown Salisbury. After the break, we talk with poet, author, and playwright Sonia Sanchez. This is Don Rush, and you're listening to Delmarva Today.
Hi, this is Rob Reinhart, host of Acoustic Cafe, now a part of the weekend lineup here at WSDL. So what is Acoustic Cafe? Well, each week we present 2 hours of some of the finest singer-songwriters working, both today and yesterday. That could be Jim James to Katie Tunstall, John Prine to Joni Mitchell, and everything in between. We also have a weekly in-studio guest who plays for you live. I think you'll like it. It's Acoustic Cafe, Sunday evenings at 8, here on WSDL 90.7 FM.
Welcome back to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. Sonia Sanchez has been called a pioneer of the black arts movement as a poet, author, and playwright. Maya Angelou has called her a lion in literature's forest, saying that when she writes, she roars. We sat down with her during an appearance on the campus of Salisbury University to talk about her writing and the issue of race in the Obama era.
Within probably the last year, we've had two serious cases of young African-American men who have been killed. The latest being Jordan Davis, but a year or so ago was Trayvon Martin. What's your impression of those cases? But more importantly, I think, what is the impact on the discussion that takes place in this country in terms of the racial divide?
Well, I think that everything that happens in this country, at least in America, is always has to be explained away in terms of race. That seems to be our history and our history. But one of the things that we should begin to talk about are the laws that are being passed or people trying to pass. One of them, in the Midwest, when you have a business and you're saying simply that if you're gay, I don't want to serve you. And you have to look up and think there's something really wrong because they can extend that to if you're black, I don't want to serve you. Or if you're Latino, I don't want to serve you. Or if you're Japanese, I don't want to serve you. I mean, it's like it's a weird kind of thing that's happening. And it has a lot to do, I think, in my head with almost a last-ditch effort of people to say simply, I want to maintain control over so-called minorities or people who are unlike me. You know, so therefore you have a law that says stand your ground. But as you watch that case with Brother Trayvon, you saw stand your ground to me should mean that if someone comes towards you and attacks you and you happen to have a weapon, then you can defend yourself. But to me, stand your ground doesn't mean that you go out of your safe environment and track someone and then say, by golly, by gee, I'm standing my ground because this person's attacking me. When you look up and think that, I mean, you as a human being, if someone seems to be trailing you, you're going to defend yourself. And you defend yourself with, at least in American folklore, by duking it out. And evidently that's what that young man was doing, was duking it out, and he was shot. I just think at some point that there because of, in quotes, perceived successes of African-American people, of people of color, of women, you know, the backlash against women about they cannot maintain their own bodies, that women really don't have enough smarts to say that if I am raped by my stepfather or my father or an intruder, you know, I don't want to keep this baby. You know, I have a right to say I don't want that. American men are saying, but you don't have that right. You know, we're going to give that to the Supreme Court, or we're going to make that decision for you. And I grew up in Harlem, and I remember in my building, the uproar in our building, but all the women in that building, because a woman had 5 children. She was pregnant with a 6th, and she goes to a butcher. And literally a butcher who butchers her, and she dies, and the children are, you know, then, and the father and the husband, they're all dislodged because of that. Because coitus is kept in America, people have gotten abortions forever and ever. If you were rich, if you're well-to-do, you could get an abortion, you know, period. You could say, I cannot maintain this new body inside of me. I don't want it. It's only the poor and working class that didn't have that ability. So what we're seeing is not only a race, it's a class thing that's going on in this place called America, and very much a class thing. It's very much an idea of men who sit in Congress and cut food stamps. And I always say, well, why don't you cut your salary then? Why don't you give back some of that salary? When you leave the Congress or the Senate, you're going to have money. You know, you're going to have health care like you won't believe, but yet you want to deny all of this to what I call ordinary working class people, the people that my dad came from, you know, and maybe your father came from, people who work very hard and deserve more than they're getting. So I think we have got to, at some point, begin to target the laws that have arisen in Florida about, you know, stand your ground, and not even discuss where that came from or how it came about, but does it work? And evidently it is not working, because in two major cases, it has not worked. And the comedians have had a great day with this. You know, when you watch, what's that comedy, the comedy channel, I'm blanking on John. I mean, what you see with them is that they're making merry of it, showing how ridiculous some of this is, but also how tragic it is also, too. If you happen to be a young male of color out at night, I used to say to children, to people, and to my students in universities, you know, when you go out at night, if you don't know, you cannot go out at night roaming. You know, if you go out at night, you must have a point A to get to a point B, then you're safe. If you go out and think, whoa, you know, I'm just, you know, here, and I'm just, it's my city, I can go out roaming by myself. No, I'm afraid you can't, not if you look black in this place called America. You know, when I was up for tenure many years ago, I'm retired now, they had 3 committees. I do plays, I do prose, and I do poetry. And one of the professors said to me, you know, your plays are just, you know, sometimes, you know, one of your plays, you had this young black guy running down the streets of Harlem, and then a patrol car comes and they bang him up against the wall and said, boy, what are you doing out at 2 o'clock in the morning? And he turned and said, but it's Harlem, it's my home. I got a right, and they slapped him and hit him and knocked him up. He said, that doesn't happen. Well, you know, I said, well, you know, you look, that's my reality growing up in Harlem. The next morning, I get up in the morning, I get my kids off to school, I drink my green tea, I open the New York Times, front page was this picture of this young black guy at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, who was running down 125th Street going, right? Right? And the cop car came up and they pushed him up against it. They said, boy, what are you doing? He said, it's my Harlem. I live here. And they proceeded. And the guy looked at me and said, touche, Professor Sanchez. You know, the terrible thing about that is that it exists. The terrible thing that people have short memory, that I remember in the 60s when I met with some IRA people who came to America because we supported them, that we talked about, you know, that happened to the Irish, but they have a short memory now. They've forgotten it. You know, if we must have long-term memories now. And it meant because if that happens here, you know, I still supported the IRA. You know, if you understand what I'm saying, because the point is that what they were doing was correct, you know, in that country. But the point is that I said to them, you need to talk to people in this country. Every people who come here and they see blacks, they feel superior to them. And as when I was growing up in New York, in one of the civic studies or history classes, someone raised hand, well, I don't understand these Negroes at that time, they said, because, I mean, like, you know, why don't they get out of these ghettos, you know, because they don't understand the whole idea of race and money and economics, you know, and it pays to have poverty in a place called America. It paid to have a Harlem, you know, and undereducating people. And in the 1970s, I wrote a long article about I stumbled on it, you know, because I was teaching at the University of Pitt at the time, the economics of having people in prison. I stumbled upon that, the amount of money that prisons were making in the southern states. You know, and I mean, I read it, and then I had to read it again. You know, he said, well, maybe I'm not reading this properly. You cannot tell me you are making millions of dollars off of the backs of, you know, people who are in these prisons. And lo and behold, it was, you know, and that's before people have written books now about, you know, how you make money by having prisoners.
Do you think the discussions that we're having now, indeed, we're talking about the prison complex, we're talking about Standard Ground, do you think that it's made Americans more aware of these kinds of divides? I mean, are we having a productive discussion?
Well, it's not. It's really basically not really a discussion, except if you see MNBC. What is it? MNBC?
MSNBC.
Right. On Saturday mornings and Sunday mornings, you'll see, you know, some of the professors and people and activists talking about it. But the newspapers don't really talk about it. It's not on many of these shows that are unbelievable. You know, I miss Edward R. Murrow. You know, people my age remember Murrow, who was such an intelligent interviewer and such an intelligent newspaper person. You know, I remember two things that he did that were amazing things. One was when we had the MacArthur scare, right?
MacArthur, yeah.
And he had MacArthur on. And he, with his cigarette, he leaned back and asked questions, and he said, now you answer, and he talked. When MacArthur finished, he was finished. That's what this is truly all about, finally.
One of the things, finally, that struck me about your writing, if I were to find a word to sum it up, it's struggle. It seems to me that whether it's gender, it's class, or it's race, it seems to me that your writing, whether the poems, plays, what have you, they really all center around struggle.
And it is struggle because we're in the midst of struggle right now. You know, we're struggling with the whole idea of, will there be an earth? Think on that. I never thought we'd come to a point where we have, that people don't even want to have a discussion about global warming. People deny that it exists. I mean, people in the Congress, mind you, you know, people who pass laws and make laws. I never thought we'd come to that point, you know. And this earth is watching us. I mean, if I were this earth, I would finally say, I mean, so you call yourselves human. You know, you do realize that if anything will exist after an atomic blast or after I drown all of you, whatever, will be the cockroach. That's indicative of something, is it not? That a cockroach will survive and we won't. The most intelligent people on the planet Earth, and we cannot learn how to share this Earth. That is an amazing statement, my brother. So you've got to struggle. I have to struggle with students to bring them out. I mean, I taught at Tyler College of Art, right? And this young brother came in, and he had dyed his hair purple and gold, right? You know, now that's a art school, and so that's a place where usually they accept anything. So they're looking at this young white male. It's obviously that he's gay. At the end of each session, I make us hold hands and say something. Nobody wanted to hold hands. I grabbed his hand and told one of the female students, grab his hand. After 2 weeks, he read his most exquisite poetry. That everybody went back and went, whoa, that is good, right? What I'm saying, my dear brother, is that you've got to insist that people look up and use their eyes, but above all, use their hearts. This country puts on the idiot box, that is the television, everything that responds to below the stomach. You know, if you can eat it, then good. You know, if you can screw it, good. You know what I mean? Whatever. Everything below the stomach, right? Whatever. Anything above that, meaning the heart and the brain, let's not give that to them at all, you see. Because if we make them think, we make them really feel, you know, not the stuff, the spewing of crap, you know, and hatred, but really make them feel at some point, you know, we are then moving towards perhaps more like human beings. And so it is a struggle to get young children. When I go into the schools in Philadelphia, where there were some young black kids chasing another kid because he was gay, and I set him down. I said, you must be kidding. In this same turf, years ago, people used to chase you because you were black. They looked at me, yeah, so what are you doing now? I said, you don't have to work. You don't have to travel with that guy. You don't have to deal with him. You have to go to his house. But he's a human being. You know, and so you have to begin to teach, you know, the qualities of what it means to be human on this earth. And it's a struggle that I'm willing to do, because in the long run, these are human beings, our children. They truly do understand, you know, they truly have been hurt, they've been touched, whatever. And they know at some point, you know, that what is the correct thing and the human thing to do. You just have to remind them, you know, and you can remind them through allowing them to write poetry. You know, I read my poetry, they write their poetry, and they come up a whole nother different kind of people. And I figured that America's worth struggling for. I mean, our people here, our ancestors, be the ones who went west, the ones who came out of slavery, you know, of enslavement, you know, the ones who experienced, you know, all the horrors of living in the urban centers. They deserve a better earth. And we deserve also to say to Mother Earth, finally, we really are human. We really will save you eventually, you know? I mean, it takes a minute, you know? We're so bloody intelligent, you know, that sometimes we think we know it all, but we really want to process this thing and look at you and say simply that we want to save you. Because this earth, I mean, really, we probably have no more, one of the scientists said, at the most 15 years to turn around this whole destruction that we are involved with this earth. And if we don't turn around, we all need to go get a bottle of wine, pull down the shade, and just say, hey, it's coming, you know? But I think I'm hoping that we have enough intelligence to do it right.
Author Sonia Sanchez, poet, author, and playwright, has been called a pioneer in the black arts movement. This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC14.org.